Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
Yes, I have Tracy Martin here with me now. How are you doing, Tracy?
I'm good, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. First up today, let's talk about research that was released last week that revealed some alarming statistics about youth relationships, such as how 20% of female and 9% of male secondary school students have experienced sexual abuse, with most cases involving a boyfriend, girlfriend or a friend. So we do already have a program for students that promotes healthy and safe relationships called Mates and Dates, which is currently being delivered in 23% of high schools for year 9 to 13. Students. But New Zealand First is calling to offer programs for all Year 10 students. Why Year 10 specifically?
It's based on a model that I've been working with the Women's Refuge in Rodney for. And so it's based on a model that includes understanding around coercive control inside of a relationship, understanding around consent and so on and so forth. So we've made it at Year 10 because we want it to be delivered compulsorily inside the curriculum, and we don't want to interfere with Year 11, 12 and 13, which are currently exam years. And we also know that there are the other programs like Leslie Elliott's programs, Love Me Not and so on, that are also going to run alongside of those continually with some of those older students.
But is having an exam enough of a reason not to engage with, you know, really important information about how young men and women should be treating each other? I'm just concerned that isn't Year 10 just doing this education for 1 year? That might not be enough for young people.
That's not what the pilot has showed us. The pilot's been running for 5 years, just in the schools in the Rodney electorate. And what that has been showing us, but unfortunately it's only been had enough funding to target Year 10 individuals that have been identified as at risk. And that's one of the other things about the policy. We want it for every student. We don't want to try and predict who will need this level of education and who won't. So what the pilot's showing us is that Year 10 is the start of really complex relationships tend to start being formed, and we want to jump in really early, particularly around that understanding of coercive control and understanding around consent. And that just builds on the other programs that are still in place as students get older.
And so the research that was released last week also discussed how violence in youth relationships has been connected with bullying in primary and intermediate schools. So has New Zealand First considered rolling out programs in these younger, you know, primary intermediate schools as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's another piece of work that we're doing. It's a bigger piece of work, and there's three or four pilots again, or three or four really good examples of how anti-bullying programs can be placed inside of the school network. And one of those requires professional development of the teaching staff and the adults that are inside the schools, so that they recognise the behaviours in themselves, as well as recognising the signs of somebody who is being bullied. So we're still working on that policy space, because there's some really good examples of it, but we're just looking at which way we think we should jump.
And in terms of intervention services for people who've already experienced or used relationship abuse, the research that was released last week described how there weren't enough specific intervention services on offer for young people. Is this also something New Zealand First is looking at introducing?
It is. It's a piece of, again, it's another piece of policy work I'm talking with, mostly around with Women's Refuge and some of the other organisations. Shakti, again, is another one that we're having a few conversations with, particularly for their migrant community or people from different cultural backgrounds, so that we make sure that they're all appropriate. And I think the other thing too is we have to look at the ratio between counselling staff inside our secondary schools, the ratio between counselling staff and the number of students they are being asked to care for, and whether that ratio needs to be dropped, and then what access do they have to services outside the school to make sure that they then can recommend on. So it's a pretty big picture.
I mean, but some of the research, so that research that was released last week also said about some of the barriers that exist for young people in relation to intervention services that are currently on offer, that often they don't really feel comfortable speaking to adults, and that they're more comfortable speaking to their peers. I mean, is this also being considered when developing these future possible programs?
Yeah, I mean, many schools are running a peer mediation program, so there's some professional development for young people at year 12, year 13 to actually be support networks for their peers. However, when you start getting into really, really extreme levels of violence, whether it be sexual violence or physical violence, I think what we are going to need to do, and one of the first jobs I ever had when I was at school was I was actually a youth line telephone counsellor. So the fact that those services have been starved for funding and that Youthline is having to fight to survive is another, again, it's another little space that I'm trying to work on and make sure that we get our funding models right and how can we actually assist for that sort of access to be just more prevalent around the country.
Mm. And so also the research said last week that new programs should think globally and act locally. So capitalising on international research about effective programs, but also making sure it's culturally relevant to our own context. So, for example, taking a specific approach with young Māori. So is this also something New Zealand First would incorporate into their plan to roll out these effective programs in New Zealand?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's not just, I mean, certainly you've got young Māori, you've got young Pacifica, you've actually got different people of different faith backgrounds. So you're dealing with students that that may not have a faith, and then you might be dealing with students that are Christian-based or some other faith-based. You know, you've got to be able to provide for the individual so that they feel safe to seek assistance. Mm. So that's the complex nature of it, but at the same time, it's the essential nature of it. All that is part of the conversation, definitely.
Mm. And so I'd also like to talk to you today about New Zealand First's comments yesterday in Parliament in response to the London terror attacks. So Winston Peters said New Zealand's Islamic communities must clean house and that this should start with their own families. Isn't putting the onus purely on the Islamic community for situations like this encouraging divisive rhetoric?
He didn't say that New Zealand Islamic communities needed to clean house. He said that Islamic communities needed to start, and he didn't identify New Zealand specifically. We were talking about it in the context of the London attack.
He was also implying that this relates to New Zealand, though, because he did go on to say about before something like this happens in New Zealand, we need to take a stand for what we believe in New Zealand. So he was sort of implying that this relates to New Zealand Islamic communities as well.
Not saying that he didn't mean that the full of the Islamic community. I'm just saying that he didn't specifically say the New Zealand Islamic community, all right? With regard to, and if you actually go back and have a look at the speech, if you put it into the context of what he said that we will be told that these are lone wolf attackers, that nobody knew what they were going to do, that members of their extended family or extended community will plead ignorance, and that is not possible, and that they need to step up just in the same way that, say, let's just put it into a New Zealand situation of those nannies up in the north who actually turned in all their grandchildren for doing those crimes up in the north. You know, there is a level where we all have to participate in making sure that if we see that a crime may take place, we must actually act on it to try and prevent it.
I mean, but it's a bit speculative, though, saying that the families of the assailants knew about their plans and that it's their fault, kind of implying that it's not their it's their fault for not speaking up. So when I think, doesn't the solution go a bit more widely than that, rather than just these families, blaming these families?
I guess it depends on whether you've decided that he was blaming them as opposed to actually saying that these communities need to take action. And if people know, then they need to step forward and actually make sure the authorities know. If we take one of the young men that was shot in London the other day, one of the perpetrators. Now, see, two people of his community had drawn the attention of the police to that young man and his actions and said that they were dangerous and they were concerned about his actions. And so the next part of what, if communities do report, then there must be action taken by the police, by the other organisations that are then charged with our protection. So, yeah, it's not a single silver bullet, but certainly we must participate if we see that there is possibly a crime going to take place.
Yeah, I don't know. I just worry that the rhetoric, that, like Winston's yesterday in Parliament, sort of encourages broad anti-Muslim sentiment when really it's only a small sliver of Muslims who are Islamic extremists.
But how would you say Islamic extremists then, if that is exactly... How else would you describe these young people who are Islamic extremists if you can't use the phrase Islamic extremist?
No, but I mean, he's saying that, you know, the Islamic community must do something about this. But the Islamic community around the world and in New Zealand have been very critical of the attacks. And, the Federation of Islamic Associations of New Zealand president has said of the attackers that they are a bunch of lunatics who have completely taken verses of the Quran out of context and built up their own destructive ideology. I mean, I think the Islamic community, the broad Islamic community throughout the world, is just as horrified as the non-Islamic community about these attacks.
And I don't disagree with you. I think what Winston Peters said yesterday was that members of the, and what he said quite clearly in a sentence was, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, family members and community members of these monsters, and he used the word monsters, but people who go in to kill the innocent indiscriminately, must step forward and actually report before these things happen. If they know something, they must report it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me this week, Tracy. I'll talk to you again next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.